on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to the Wednesday, February 18th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I will be with you over this next hour to bring you the stories that matter, to teach you the lessons you need to learn, and most importantly, to answer your finance and investment questions. To that end, in just a bit, we will talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics. But why don't we tackle this caller question now?
Yes, I'd like your opinion on Credo Technology, ticker number CRDO. Thank you very much. Bye.
Credo Technology Group is ticker CRDO. It is a $22.5 billion market cap company that's had a rough year thus far in 2026, down 11.11%. But in spite of that, it's up 70% over the past 52 weeks. Now, why might that be? Well, revenue growth is incredible over the past 5 years, up from $58.7 million to $436 million in 2025, their fiscal year ending in April, projected to be $1.2 billion this year and $1.83 billion next year. In fact, 2025 was the first year that it ever made money. Now, what does it do? Well, it creates high-speed connectivity, particularly for AI data centers and also for cloud infrastructure. So understandably, with this AI data center build out, right, this is the core thesis here, their product is critical. It is a power efficient alternative to these optical transceivers. And so it helps with this efficiency. And so as NVIDIA GPUs, these hyperscaler clusters are building out, so too does the demand for this company's products. And that explains this explosive revenue acceleration. Now, one thing of concern is that the dominant driver of revenue is one company, Microsoft. And so you have a little bit of asymmetric risk here in this profile. And understandably, they've been trying to diversify out across additional hyperscalers. At this point, I think it's about 10% amongst a couple other companies. So they've diversified away a little bit. But you're seeing a pullback here. You're seeing an understandable pullback. And even with this pullback, it's still trading at 31.4 price to forward-looking earnings. So, you know, what's going on here, right? You have a growth story of this secular driver that has been floating this company and companies like it for so long. But you got a key risk. You have heavy customer concentration, a huge percentage. And so, you know, with other advances in technology as well, that may not pair as well with their AEC product, that's their singular driver of revenue. Their market could shrink substantially. And so that's certainly worth watching closely. It is and has been in a bit of a pullback since the end of 2025. It's up 2.49% today. Not seeing anything from a technical momentum basis that suggests that it's found that area of support yet. So for now, I'd keep it on my watch list because it still is a bit expensive and revenue growth is slowing down. And of course, on top of that, those risks that we mentioned. That is CRDO, Credo Technology Group. Well, we got another great show planned for you today. And our main focus point is really about the core and explore portfolio strategy. What does that mean? Well, it all starts with a breakdown of the foundational concepts of asset allocation and why deciding how to divide your capital across these different asset classes is statistically more important than picking individual winning assets. We talk about this all the time. The only free lunch in investing is diversification. We also touch on the Federal Reserve warning that progress towards inflation is still a bit uneven, and so the Fed may turn hawkish. We'll also touch on the U.S. copper supply and why the kink may not be in bringing new minds online, but in processing. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on why selling AI software isn't as much as a money-making business as it used to be. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Gold and another on DraftKings Inc., ticker DKNG, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully some live calls throughout the show. Now we're going into a break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. When we get back, we'll talk about today's market activity, as well as answer Sammy from San Francisco's question. So hang on.
When you tell your friends about InvestTalk and they ask you why you listen, let them know there are many reasons, and one is parallel investing from KPP Financial and InvestTalk host Justin Klein. Parallel investing means Justin invests right alongside KPP Financial clients. He makes the same trade for KPP Financial on the same day, at the same price, and the same percentages as KPP clients. There's no front running and no special treatment. In this way, Justin and KPP Financial share the same risks and the same potential for success. Parallel investing aligns the interests of Justin and KPP Financial with those of his clients. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your questions about parallel investing. And you can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. 24/7, rain or shine, there's always value in the InvestTalk podcast. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Sammy from San Francisco. You got a question about Netflix. You own it or are you looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy.
Okay.
So the stock has come down quite a bit. Yes, I wanted to get your thoughts.
Well, the stock has come down quite a bit. Netflix, of course, the world's dominant subscription video streaming platform. I think they have about 300 million plus subscribers globally. So an absolute behemoth. Right now, it's sitting at about $330 billion market cap, and that's after coming down 31.64% in the last 3 months and 16.82% year to date. Now, the elephant in the room is this Warner Brothers Discovery acquisition, right? They announced their plans to acquire Warner Brothers for $72 billion, kind of shocking the market because Netflix has historically had, let's say, an aversion to M&A. But again, since that announcement, since they were first rumored to be interested in those assets, the stock's dropped over 30%. And we do have a deadline coming up. There is a shareholder vote, which is set for March 20th, while at the same time, Paramount is mounting a rival bid. And so this is complicating the timeline, especially as regulatory uncertainty is a major overhang as well. Now, one good thing for Netflix is that ad revenue grew by more than 2.5 times from 2024 to over $1.5 billion as of the end of 2025. And so, you know, with that, they also are saying they're expecting a rough doubling of ad revenue again into 2026. And this is with their ad-supported tier scaling, honestly, pretty darn fast. And their core business, I mean, it's certainly healthy. You had year-over-year revenue growth of nearly 16%. And they're expanding into live games, which is certainly enticing as well. And of course, that, you know, crackdown on passwords, which has enabled them to have more and more consumers, even with the same amount of hours being watched. And so that all sounds pretty good, right? It sounds like it's cheaper than it's been in quite some time. It's trading at 23.9 times price to forward-looking earnings. But. You just have too much overhang from this merger. You don't know what's going to happen here. It is one of those things that is going to be the primary driver of Netflix's performance, certainly at least until there's some sort of resolution. And so unless you are trying to make some sort of play on merger arbitrage, I would just stay away for now because these things can be so volatile, especially in this, let's say, interesting regulatory environment. Thanks for the call, Sammy. Have a great day. Why don't we talk a little bit about the market today, U.S. stocks finishing a bit higher, though ending off of their worst levels. But across the board, we saw some positive performance. The Dow was up 26 basis points. S&P 500 was up about 56 basis points on the day. NASDAQ up 78. Small caps, Russell 2000 up 45. Diving a bit deeper, big tech was broadly higher. Amazon and Nvidia look to be the big standouts amongst that group. While high beta names, retail investor favorites, those most shorted stocks out there, doing fairly well, signaling a bit of a risk-on shift in the day. Other areas of outperformance included memory and semiconductor software, some of those larger banks. Relative underperformers included networking names, pharmaceutical, hospital, PNC insurance, REITs, and utilities. On the bond side, treasuries were weaker across the curve. You saw yields up about 3 basis points. Dollar index up 60, ending near its best levels for the day, while gold finished up 2.1%. Silver was up 5.5%. Bitcoin, the opposite direction, down 2%. And crude oil, near their best levels, up 4.5%, amidst these concerns about rising tensions between the U.S. and Iran. And so you had a lot of moving parts. You had short covering, you had that continued software bounce, that rotation into risk on, which led to defensive underperformance. You had that big, big oil rally, and you had the strong dollar and precious metals just absolutely ripping. From an earnings perspective, I mean, it was still a bit busy on the earnings calendar. You did see a mix to somewhat more upbeat takeaways, including from some companies who are under pressure amidst this AI disruption fear. And then on the economic data front, you got a little bit of a surprise to the upside. You had FOMC minutes that seemed to lean a touch more hawkish that we will dive into a little bit later on in the show. But it's not all over for the rest of the week, right? You have some pretty big earnings tomorrow, Walmart's earnings tomorrow. You have the potential for the Supreme Court to rule on tariffs on Friday. Thursday will also bring us initial claims for the week, as well as December trade data, February Philly Fed manufacturing, and January pending home sales. And then December personal income, spending, and PCE inflation, as well as flash PMIs and the University of Michigan sentiment for February will round out the week on Friday. Now, from time to time, and it seems like we're getting more and more questions as some of you are starting to check out our content over there on our YouTube channel, but from time to time, we do get questions that are left in the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. We treat those as equally important as those that we get via voicemail or our live calls, because all of your questions matter. Now, this question is from a user who says, I've had my eyes on Lyft since it's been going down nicely. At what level would you be interested in getting into this stock? Let's take a look at Lyft. Lyft, of course, is the number 2 US rideshare platform behind Uber. And so it is part of the gig economy. It connects riders through their application towards rides, replacing, of course, taxis in the past decade or so. And it's become pretty ubiquitous, yet prices have continued to rise. Now, that's not the only thing it does. It has bikes. It has scooters. It has free now. It has private hire vehicles, taxis, all sorts of businesses. But the one thing that it does not have, which I think is a notable gap relative to Uber, is it does not have food delivery. Uber, of course, having Uber Eats. Now, more recently, right, it's been ranging roughly, you know, 10, let's see, where is it? What did it finish trading at today? Trading about 13.71 today. It has had a bit of a rough year thus far, down 29.22%, down 36.82%. over the past 3 months. And I mean, profitability compared to Uber is just frankly nowhere near as good. I mean, return on equity, yes, is high, but you know, earnings per share, it's not really comparable. You know, they just started making money in 2024. They're projected to have a net margin in 2026 of 3.4%. And so you're having this post-earnings sell-off, right? Q4 missed on rider metrics. You had that surprise to the downside on EPS and revenue below expectations. You have one of the big narratives of autonomous vehicles, whether or not they're going to come about. I mean, I live in LA. Waymo is a great way to get around. And the fact that, you know, they just have been persistently on every metric below where Uber has been. Now, will this international expansion via Freenow help? Maybe. But either way, bottom line here, it may be a turnaround story down the road, but nothing here is really suggesting that it's on the uptrend right now. That's Lyft, L-Y-F-T. Thanks for watching. Going into a break, still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your finance and investment questions here on Invest Talk.
In the early days, Invest Talk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
The Core and Explore portfolio strategy. Now, when investors talk about building a portfolio, it always starts with one core decision, and that decision is what guides everything else. And we in the business like to call that asset allocation. Now, what is asset allocation? Well, it simply means dividing your investments among stocks, bonds, cash, and maybe even when you dive deeper, subdividing between tech stocks, utilities, financials, between government bonds, investment-grade bonds, junk bonds. Now, the mix is not random, right? It should reflect your personal financial goals, your timeline, and one thing that people often forget about, their risk tolerance. Your time horizon, though, I mean, it plays a pretty central role in that decision. If you have decades before you need the money, you can typically afford to take on a bit more volatility, a bit more risk. If you're closer to needing the funds, you need to preserve that capital. Well, then that's a critical thing to know before you build this asset allocation, because then you can't necessarily take on the same level of risk. Risk tolerance is therefore, I would say, the second most important part of asset allocation. Why is that? Well, even if you have a long time period in which to potentially get gains and also maybe stomach some volatility, there's a bit more psychological, financial aspect of it that may not allow you to. And so risk tolerance measures not only your ability to absorb losses, but your willingness to stay invested when markets decline. Now, the right allocation is one that balances growth potential with the ability to, let's say, sleep at night. Once you've chosen that mix, diversification becomes the tool that spreads risk within it. Diversification is the principle of not really putting all of your eggs into one basket, because different assets, they don't move in perfect lockstep with each other. Now, under certain conditions, you can see stocks and bonds move the same way, cash move the opposite way, and what have you. But over longer periods of time, diversification is the idea of putting these non-correlated or less than correlated, less than perfectly correlated assets into a basket in order to lower volatility, lower your overall risk. As an example, interest rates. As they climb, well, bonds tend to be pressured. Why? Because currently on-the-run bonds, the new bonds are going to have higher interest rates than the bonds that are already out there. With lower coupon rates, those bonds are worth less. At the same time, equities may be driven by earnings growth instead. And so by holding multiple asset classes, you're reducing the chance that one bad outcome derails your whole plan. Diversification, it also applies within each asset class. Owning a range of industries and companies helps offset weakness in any single sector. Weakness in technology can be balanced with strength in healthcare or consumer goods. Mutual funds and index funds, they often make this process easier by bundling many securities into one investment. A broad market index fund can provide exposure to thousands of companies at once and at minimal cost with great ease. But just because something's a mutual fund or just because something's an index fund or an ETF doesn't mean it's diversified. Some are pretty narrowly focused. Some have a lot of concentration risk. And so as you add investments to diversify, you must also be mindful of the other parts of things, fees, which can compound over time. Once your portfolio is allocated and diversified, it's not going to stay perfectly balanced forever. Markets move, certain assets will outperform others in different cycles. And that's where rebalancing comes in. Rebalancing means bringing your portfolio back to its original target allocation, So that if stocks surge and grow from 60 to 80% of your portfolio, your risk level has, yeah, it's quietly increased. Rebalancing would involve trimming those stocks, adding to those other asset classes. And that's all about discipline. It forces investors to systematically sell high and buy low over time. Whether done on a schedule or based on percentage thresholds or whatever, thoughtful rebalancing keeps your portfolio aligned with your goals and your risk profile. And so enter this idea of core and explore. You create this portfolio with this asset allocation that has consistent, similar exposure to what the market has based on your risk tolerance, based on your time horizon. And you have some of these minimal exposures in your portfolio to other areas of the market in a more concentrated way. Things that you believe thematically may make sense given the current market environment. Either way, the backbone of everybody's portfolio is to take into consideration those key aspects, your horizon, your risk tolerance, what your goals are. And keeping it well-diversified and rebalanced over time is the best way to ensure the chance of having the best possible outcome. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we're going to ask a very important question. Trade wars and wine. What does the new global tariff map look like? A new report, a recently released report, reveals how recent trade policy shifts are drastically redrawing the global competitive map. So, we'll analyze who are the winners, who are the losers in the commodities market as relative tariff prices, they seem to be changing pretty quickly, sometimes overnight. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your finance and investment calls. We already had one live call today. I'd love to have at least one more before we head off on this beautiful Wednesday. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Hey, Luke and Justin, Bill from Philadelphia here. Calling about DraftKings, ticker symbol DKNG. So they just have earnings, which they did pretty well at. Revenue was up, margin was up, but their guidance for 2026, I guess, wasn't great. And the stock fell about 18%, 17, 18% or so. And wanted to get your thoughts if this would be a good time to start picking up some shares. I'm interested in that space, and I actually use DraftKings, so wanted to hear what their opinion was. Love what you guys do in the show. Looking forward to hearing your response. Take care.
DraftKings Inc., ticker DKNG, is an $11.8 billion market cap company that really exploded onto the scene in terms of its revenue during the pandemic. I mean, that's when it started just absolutely dominating. 2020, its revenue was $615 million, grew to $1.29 billion in 2021, grew again to $2.24 billion in 2022. And so over the past 5 years, revenue growth has been 58% on an annualized basis, though most of that is backloaded. From 2024 into 2025, revenue grew from $4.7 billion to $6 billion. This upcoming year, it's only projected to grow from $6 to $6.9 billion. And with the exception of the last year, it's lost money nearly every single year. Now, we're seeing margins expand a bit. Net margin was 10 basis points last year, projected to grow to 2.5% this upcoming year. It's currently trading at about 43 times price to forward-looking earnings. But in spite of it finally making money last year, it had a really, really rough year. Down 54.92% in the past 52 weeks. Down 32.65% year to date. Down 20.97% over the past 3 months. Why is that? Well, one of the reasons is earnings not great, earnings missed, and you have this double whammy as well that crushed the stock in February. Earnings missed by 5%. But of course, the bigger blow was 2026 revenue guidance came in from 400 to 800 million, decently below what Wall Street was expecting. And you can forgive having a bad quarter, really. The market can forgive you, but when you adjust full year guidance like that downward, it's not great. Now, sports betting results, they are inherently lumpy. When bettors run hot, right, the house loses. And DraftKings has been on the wrong side of hold rates in a couple key quarters, and that's compressed revenue relative to what you've seen in terms of growth wager volume. You also have another emerging threat, which has virtually no barrier to entry. You got Polymarket, you got Kalshi. Of course, I'm talking about those decentralized prediction markets, and they're pulling those tech-savvy users using those event contracts that are, at least for now, legally distinct from gambling. You also have state taxation pressure. You have to remember that a decade ago, right, gambling was mostly focused in a couple areas of the country, but now it's becoming a bit more ubiquitous, a bit more widespread. Now, the bull case, of course, is online gambling expansion, right? But at the same time, guidance missed. And the market certainly didn't forgive that. And so in spite of it being up 2.74%, it seems a little listless in its fall downward. So for now, I would certainly keep it on my watch list. Might be a rough year for DraftKings. Thanks for the call. Why don't we tackle another caller, or rather viewer question that came over from our InvestTalk YouTube channel. This one is on ticker RSKD. It says, hey, Justin and Luke, what are your thoughts on Riskified? Let's pull this up here on my screen. RSKD is a packaged software name. In fact, it's an Israeli-founded AI-powered e-commerce fraud prevention and risk intelligence platform is how it defines itself. So what they do, and it's a bit of a unique model, is they offer a chargeback guarantee, meaning merchants pay Riskified a fee on approved transactions, and Riskified absorbs the losses if a fraudulent transaction slips through. And so what they say is this kind of aligns their incentives. Riskified only makes money when it approves legitimate orders. And so the value add here is a bit of protection from abuse. Now, how's that translated to stock performance? Not great. Over the past year, down 22.03%. I mean, this is a very small company. It's only 785 million. So certainly a small cap company. But at the same time, revenue's been growing, usage has been growing, sales are up 20% on an annualized basis, albeit very much backloaded into 2020 through 2022. And they still aren't making money. Return on equity is 9.2%, net margins negative 9%, potentially making money for the first time in 2027 on a bottom line basis, because net margin next year is projected to be just under zero at 10 basis points. And so for me, okay, you know, you have this backloaded growth, but it's been pretty slow the past couple of years. I mean, they only grew from 297 million to 327, projected to grow from 327 to 342 when they announced earnings on March 4th, and then from 342 to 374. So you have very slow, moderate, modest, if you will, revenue growth. So it's a bit uninspiring, especially for a software company, for an AI integrated platform. And so as they're trying to expand products in order to diversify the revenue stream, it's just not really manifesting itself in their fundamentals. So, you know, this company has dropped off pretty significantly from its IPO back in 2021 when it traded at $36 a share. Now it trades at $453, and it's been ranging for the better part of 3 years. So frankly, not seeing too much to be excited about here. That is Riskified Limited, ticker RSKD. The Federal Reserve. Typically, when the Fed Board of Governors says something, it is, well, it's market-making news. And federal officials are now signaling that the path back to that 2% inflation target may be a bit slower, maybe a bit slower, maybe a bit bumpier than many investors expect. Now, minutes from the late February or late January meeting show that policymakers, they broadly agree that inflation should continue cooling. But the key here is that timing remains uncertain. Most members, they're warning that risks of inflation staying persistently above target, it's still too meaningful. And so that explains why the Fed held rates steady after three consecutive quarter point cuts, with only two governors dissenting and further easing. Now, the chair himself, Jay Powell, emphasized patience, saying policymakers are likely to keep rates on hold while assessing the incoming data. Several participants indicated that additional cuts may not be appropriate until disinflation is clearly back on track. A few even suggested that rate hikes could return to the table if inflation stalls above target. Now, the tone of the minutes, I would say more than anything, suggests the Fed's focus has shifted more squarely towards inflation as downside risks to employment kind of faded. Recent labor data showed hiring picking up, reinforcing the view that the job market is stabilizing rather than deteriorating. Inflation, it has eased. It certainly has eased, but it remains elevated, with some of the core measures still running above the central bank's goal. Policymakers, they expressed cautious optimism that tariffs effects will fade and productivity gains from technology could help contain price pressures. Overall, I would say the market took the message in stride, but futures pricing still implies investors expect 2 to 3 rate cuts this year, leaving room for tension between Fed caution and market optimism. No reason to stop now. Here comes another listener question.
Hello, Duncan from New York. I just have a quick question about gold. So right now I have a very small portfolio that just has gold in it. I have a couple of stocks, miners in it, SSRM, GLTR, NEM, and B, Barrick Gold. My question is, let's just say that there is a correction. Right now, I don't really have that much cash in handy, but what if when that correction happens, I can sell some of my gold and then put it into any stocks that I feel like that could be a good buy as a discount? I know you said gold's going to continue building, but because I'm trying to look for some cash to pull out rather than my own cash that I'm getting from my paychecks, just looking for your 2 cents. Thank you very much and have a great day. Bye.
Well, if you're listening to the answer to your question, hopefully you also listened to the focus point as well. Now, yes, I do think, because you know Justin and I aren't one person, we have different thoughts on different things, but we both tend to agree that the drivers of price appreciation in precious metals and commodities have not changed. You have a world that is trying to wean itself off of dollar-denominated debt, dollar-denominated assets. You have a U.S. that has, over the past 30, 40, 50 years, wielded the dollar and the sanctions power that comes with it in a way that some people, other countries, don't necessarily like. At the same time, you have massive fiscal spending. You have overall deterioration of the dollar's power, purchasing power. And so these are some of the forces that are driving gold higher. And in spite of daily volatility, in spite of if there's a pullback or not, none of that has really changed. But what we talked about as the main focus point is diversification. You are putting right now all your eggs in one basket. And so even though your portfolio is small, it doesn't mean that it should be undiversified. Your concentration risk is high. And not only is it high, it's in an area that tends to be incredibly, incredibly volatile. Not just gold, but gold miners tend to be incredibly volatile. So I wouldn't be waiting for a correction in order to diversify away, because it's a reality. You could have a significant pullback in precious metals alone, and then your lack of diversification will really come back to bite you. Thanks for the call. Looks like we got plenty of time, so let's play 2 in a row.
Hello, Justin and Luke. My question is, how is the company Crane Company doing? The ticker symbol is CR, Crane Company. I am looking towards a long-term goal. It's an aerospace company. It's an aerospace subcontracting company. And I want to know what are your thoughts on the company. Thank you.
Crane Company, ticker CR, is an $11 billion market cap aerospace and defense company. So what they do is a bit of a niche within the industrial space. So they make these critical components for aerospace and electronics, specifically within aerospace and defense. And they also make valves, pumps, and fluid handling solutions for the industrial markets as well. They do about $2.3 billion in annual revenue. But really, they completed more of a major transformation in 2023 when they spun off their payments and merchandising technologies business to focus on those higher growth, higher margin markets. And since 2023, they've been doing pretty well. They opened up trading at $74 a share. Now they're trading at $200 a share. Their relative strength looks fantastic. And from 2023, I mean, they've had solid growth from $2 billion in revenue to $2.8 billion is where they're projected to be this upcoming year. Year to date, they're already up 8.66%. And their margins are pretty solid. The return on equity sits at 18%, which is very good relative to its peers. And their EBITDA margin sits at about 20%. For an industrial manufacturer, that's pretty solid as well. And so what's really been driving this? Well, aerospace and defense, bit of a secular tailwind here. Their A&E segment benefits from those strong commercial aftermarket demand and the growing defense budgets globally. So their core backlog actually grew nearly 15% year over year in Q4. They also had a bit of a strategic acquisition earlier in the year. So they closed their acquisition for these three highly engineered sensing and measurement businesses. They also acquired a flow measurement business that is seemingly doing well within their pipeline. Margins, as I mentioned, are expanding. And so what's it trading at? Well, it's trading at 29.5 times price to forward-looking earnings, a bit expensive compared to where it's been before. But with revenue growing, margins expanding, synergies being realized, it's tough to say that this isn't a good type of company to hold within your portfolio. That is Crane. Crane Company, that is. Ticker CR. Now, if you haven't checked it out already, our InvestTalk YouTube channel, we started a new series of videos, which the first one should be dropping soon. It's because oftentimes we don't think that 5 to 7 minutes is long enough to touch on one topic. And so, as InvestTalk's Spotify podcasts, iTunes podcasts, wherever you get them, podcasts have focus points, our YouTube channel will soon have deeper focus segments. If that sounds interesting to you, head over to YouTube and search InvestTalk with two T's. Like, subscribe, turn your notifications on, and you will be alerted when our first video drops. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here, but we can't do it without you. Our goal is to help you achieve your financial freedom, but we can't know what's on your mind unless you tell us. So my work is going to continue after this break. Hopefully, you would like to be a part of that. If your question is burning in your mind and you'd like to get it in before the end of today's show, dial that phone, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got one final YouTube question to answer. Looks like I think we've done three now today, so a big day for YouTube comment section questions. This one is on ticker TSMC. It says, is TSMC a good investment right now? I listen to your show daily. Well, first and foremost, thank you for listening to the show daily. And also thank you for taking that additional step and asking a question, helping to drive that conversation forward. TSMC, of course, the world's largest and most advanced contract chip foundry. They're essentially the backbone of the entire global semiconductor industry. So they fabricate these chips that are designed by fabless companies, including NVIDIA, Apple, AMD, Qualcomm, virtually every major AI chip designer. They don't really design the chips, they just manufacture them at nodes nobody else can really match at scale. They're a pretty big company, $1.5 trillion. That's more accurate here. I was looking at a different line of this company. And over the past year, it was up 78.68%, up 19.21% year to date, up 30.35%. Over the past 3 months, their revenue is insane. The revenue growth is insane. From $45 billion in 2020, projected to be $158 billion in 2026. 21.9% growth on an annualized basis. Now, because of this, because of this huge revenue growth, their price has just skyrocketed, especially in terms of relative strength, all the while having insane margins. 70.9% is what EBITDA margin is projected to be in 2026. 47% is what net margin is projected to be in 2026. And they're only really trading at a price to forward-looking earnings of 24.9 times. So what's really driving this? Well, you guessed it, AI is the entire story. They are the irreplaceable manufacturer of AI chips. They have advanced node dominance, those 3 to 2 nanometer chips. It's crazy amount, 60%. Of their total revenue. They're mass producing just small chips. And nobody's able to do it. And at the same time, they're also building this geographical diversification. They have production in Arizona, in Japan, in Germany, and they're looking to expand all over the place as well. Now, it is called Taiwan Semiconductor, meaning there will always be this geopolitical risk, this permanent overhang. As there are tensions between the US and China, it remains the single biggest tail risk. And TSMC, I mean, they get a significant amount of the revenue from China. So any escalation, any export restrictions tightening, any cross-strait conflicts, it would be a catastrophe scenario, not just for the global tech companies, but for this company as well. In spite of that, I think TSMC is a really good picks and shovels play in AI. It's not really that too expensive. And so long as hyperscalers are spending money, TSMC is going to benefit. That is Taiwan Semiconductor, the absolute backbone of the AI build-out. Thanks for watching. Now, unfortunately, we don't have enough time to go over one more talking point for you today, as we were going to discuss about the U.S.'s, say, hitch in the supply chain, which doesn't really focus on copper mines, but rather copper processors. But the good thing about InvestTalk, I would say, is that we aren't a weekly show. We aren't a monthly show. We are, in fact, a daily show. So those two topics that I talked about that we didn't quite cover, well, I'll be back with you all on Friday, and we will get to those then. Until then, I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get them anytime at iTunes and Spotify. While you're at it, please be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. One other thing I wanted to highlight, because I think it's what makes KPP Financial unique, is our practice of parallel investing, where we make trades for our clients, those trades. We make the same trades for ourselves as well on the same day, the same price, the same percentage, no front running, no special treatment. We really do what we can to put skin in the game to build trust amongst our clients. If that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and hit the portfolio review button to learn more. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.